Blog Talk Radio. Good afternoon, everyone. This is May speaking to you live. We're actually live today, November 9th, and you know, and it's a beautiful day, and it's going to be a long day for me. What about you, Cynthia, down there in Nashville?
Well, it's a rainy day down here in Nashville, but I understand a little birdie told me you're getting yourself your, they call it the ambassador of, it should be the ambassadress of rock award tonight for Rockers on Broadway. Cheers to you,
yes.
Chicklet.
Well, thank you. I know it's weird, you know, because I've been behind the scene doing, you know, working. I love music, and that saved. I've always said it's music saved my soul, my life, the whole thing. So, I got a chance to work with a lot of great people in my life, and a lot of important people. And guess what? Last night I went to see the Vanilla Fudge.
Oh, you saw Vince. Yay.
I saw
Vince. How were they?
And it was fantastic. The group, three out of the four played, you know, that were originals. And I have to tell you, Mark Stein's voice, it's still the same. I mean, and Carmine, the drummer, I mean, they were fantastic. Vinny, I mean, it was just great. And then a couple of the guys from the Rascals were in the audience as well. So it was really a New York night, and it was great. I love their singing, and people would be surprised to hear how great, because they really still sound. You know, because some artists, as time goes on, they shouldn't be on there anymore, but they sound fantastic. It sounds like they haven't lost not one iota. They have not missed a beat on this one.
Well, there was a lot of rock and roll testosterone in that air, old rock and roll testosterone in the air last night. But that's good.
Absolutely.
It's a great kickoff for you with your your award. People don't realize there's a lot more to you in the music business besides being the girlfriend of, what was that guy's name?
Some guy named
but
John.
Anyway.
I don't know.
But anyway, you know, and you know, May, I make no bones about the fact that I'm not a music girl. And it's a perfect segue into our guest today, because I didn't tell him this before we went on the air, but my son is actually a fan of his. When I said his name, my son was like, what? And, you know, my kids never show any interest in anything that I do, except when I post embarrassing pictures of them on Facebook.
And they're ready to kill you.
Guy, yeah, this guy is, he's someone, he's an enigma, because he's a performer who really honestly does not crave the spotlight. It's almost like he could take it or leave it. And the rumor was told to me by a friend of ours, Gary Raychak, our agent, that he was told by composer John Cage that if your music doesn't irritate people, you're not doing your job.
Right.
And I think that statement right there is a perfect way to bring on our guest, because we got ourselves a bad boy to add to our bad boy collection. Gary Wilson,
welcome
to the show.
Well, hello there. hey, that was great. You were talking about Vanilla Fudge. You know, I had a chance to see them back in when they had put their album on. Maybe it was the late 60s or something. I saw them in my local area. But, yeah, all the bands back in the 60s were covering, Vanilla Fudge. We were doing, like, one of their songs. And also the Young Rascals, you mentioned the
right.
Young Rascals. They were
right.
Some of my favorite bands when we were like in eighth grade, you know, or 14.
I know they did. I have to tell you though, the Vanilla Fudge, when they do a cover, their cover is not. It's really their own.
Oh,
they
yes.
take. I mean, it's not like you hear something they do it and it sounds just like the original. They really do. I mean, you keep me hanging on. And they did a Beatles song
exactly.
last night too. I was just sitting there going, I wouldn't have known. And they did a Who song. I mean, I was listening to them sing, and when they were doing it, I'm going, I know the lyrics. What song is this? This doesn't even sound like. And then when you realize it's another, it's a cover of another, a big song, you go, wow. They are amazing. They are truly amazing. So if they come into your area.
They came into, I think they were playing like Vestal, New York, which is, you know, is like right across the river from Endicott, where I was born.
Right.
And it was, had to have been like in the 60s or something, I would imagine. But they were doing, like you said, the favorite song was You Keep On, you know.
You Keep Me Hanging On and all that. But I got to tell you, if you see them now, go check them out. I mean, really, seriously.
I will.
If they're in there, go see them.
Well, you know what's a coincidence is they had put out an album on Cleopatra Records recently. And actually, I had signed to Cleopatra Records 6 months ago, and they had just released my new album. So kind of we're both on the same label at this time, Vanilla Fudge and Barry Wolf. But yeah, I always enjoyed them. You know, it was that big Hammond organ. You know, I always loved those big organs. And the Young Rascals always used it too, you know.
Right. I mean, it was funny because it was Gene Cornish was in one side, and he was sitting with my friend Carol. Also, I've known these guys for ages. I was 15.
Yeah.
So it was he was sitting with another friend of mine, like I said, Carol, and Carol manages Tommy James. And then Eddie is sitting with Miami Steve or Little Steven, as they would say, you know, Van Zandt. So he introduced the band. So there's Eddie Brigati in one end of the room, and there's, you know, it was just kind of funny. It was a great night. It was like from that 60s because they all came from that. They used to, they were on the bill together all the time back in the 60s. So they knew one another. It was good fun. But I strongly suggest anybody who's a big Vanilla Fudge fan. I mean, they were on fire. They were great last night. So,
they were always great. As I remember them, you know, great musicians and stuff.
Well, you know, the only problem is some musician as we've gotten on in years, some people shouldn't be still singing. And I'm not being disrespectful to them. It's just that sometimes your vocals don't match up anymore. And it happens to everyone. And you know, it's time some people should not be singing it, and you know, and that was it. But they, I have to say, were like, they were like the record, still like the record.
Well, you know, that it's funny, May, because it actually works into what I want to ask Gary, because grill you as a dinner special for nothing, but Gary, you play and then you disappear for a while, and then you come back, and then you disappear for a while. And it certainly isn't because you still don't have the chops, because I'm telling you, my 25-year-old son was like, uh-oh, what? I might actually have to listen to my mom's show, okay? So how do you feel that all this time later, your music, because your music is different, And I'm not saying different like, you know, people say she's different, you know, good dancer, not that kind of different. It's just a different way of getting a message out musically. And it is reaching young people still. How do you feel about that?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm really happy about that, actually. You know, I was just talking to somebody last night about that, and I was saying, I thank God, I thank everybody, you know, that, you know, I kind of had a resurrection in 2002 is when I really, of course, Beck and so forth had mentioned me in 97 and so forth, but, you know, it took to 2002, and, you know, it's great, you know, in some senses, you know, I'm really appreciative of the young and have taken me on, you know. It was in the old days, you know, they used to, you know, try to shut me off, and now all of a sudden, you know, things have switched. But, you know, when you come from a small town, sometimes it's harder to find outlets. So, you know, we would play in the most, you know, and we're talking, you know, 67, 68, 69, 70 in those areas. You know, it was always hard to find places to play with original music when you're from a small town. So you would find yourself, and, you know, I would amuse myself, too. Sometimes I would put myself into strange places, like, you know, the veterans, you know, Foreign Legion. You know, we'd play in these places where you'd least expect us, and, you know, they're expecting a polka band or some sort of conservative band, and we come in with total avant-garde. You know, we, at that time we were like, you know, smashing, and you know, we had contact mics on chalkboards where we would screech on the, with our fingernails on the chalkboard, and saxophone with the amplifier. You know, real avant-garde, but. You know, at the time, like I said, it was all, you know, leading up to a certain degree. You know, I was still trying to find myself through music. You know, I had started, you know, of course, when I was in fourth and fifth grade, I was a big fan of Dion and the Belmonts and Bobby Rydell and Fabian.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Yeah, all the rock idols, sort of. And my mom would curl my hair to look like Dion and, you know. My friends would go, geez, you know, we'd go to the boys club at night or something and jump in the pool, and my hair would turn straight, right? And my friends would go, geez, what happened to your hair or something? But anyway, at the time, you know, and then the Beatles came out in sixth grade when I was in sixth grade. And I still was with Dion, but then I changed quickly to the Beatles. And as you know, at that time, you know, every kid wanted a guitar, and so, you know, my whole neighborhood, I was brought up in the Italian neighborhood. My mom was Italian, my dad was English, so every block had a, you know, you talk about garage bands, every band block had a garage band. Well, actually, and the band, and we're talking, you know, 67, which was a great year for music. I don't know, everybody was putting out some real, you know, Hendrix, everybody was putting out great albums at the time. So, but our band was called Lord Fuzz at the time, and I got in it because they had gigs. So I was playing like Farfisa organ with the band, and you know, we were good. We were playing like every weekend against, you know, these older bands and stuff, you know, psychedelic bands and stuff, and you know, and you know, at the time too, things started to advance. As I said, you know, I was eighth grade, seventh grade, you know, at the time I was listening to, I was in the orchestra at the time too. I was playing cello and string bass and the youth.
My favorite instrument. My favorite.
Oh yeah. Which ones? Yeah. Cello.
Cello. I love that cello. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I was, you know, I was playing in various chamber ensembles through school. But at the time, I was also getting an awareness of, you know, John Cage and more avant-garde stuff, like 7th, 8th grade. So I started, you know, indoctrinating that. And, you know, plus the Mothers of Invention, Captain Beefheart, there was all these bands that were, you know, kind of experimental rock bands at the time. The Fugs, of course, in New York, they were one of my favorite, you know. I always considered the Fugs kind of one of the first underground rock bands, but could be my age too, but you know, they were putting out albums in 63, 64 in New York, and you know, on ESP records, which I would, you know, I had committed you know, demo tapes to ESP, and you know, I was still in high school at the time and junior high, and so a lot of things kind of started turning for me. I wasn't sure what direction I was looking for, experimental, you know. Actually, I got a chance, you know, when I was in, I don't know, 10th or 11th grade, I got a chance to beat Captain Beefheart. He, you know, it was rare to see him, but he was playing a few concerts, and he came to Ithaca, New York, and I had to borrow, I think, my brother's ID or something. That I got in, and at the time you only had to be 18 when I was growing up to go into drink and to go into bars and stuff. So, but I was still like 16 or something. So, you know, Captain Beefheart was playing there, you know, and they were doing at the time songs from Trout Mass Replica and Lick My Decals off, which to me are considered, I consider them the best albums from Beefheart. So we got in there early, Frank Roma and I. Frank was a sax player that played with me at the time. We grew up together. He was always in my bands and stuff. So he played sax, so he always, like, carried extra reeds with him and stuff. So we got to Beefheart show in Ithaca, and we got there early. So we got to the stage, and actually kept it before the show, and Beefheart and his manager came in, and they were checking out the stage and stuff. So I ended up, you know, giving Captain Beefheart a demo tape, and Frank Roma helped him put on a reed onto his saxophone. He was playing soprano sax every now and then, and yeah, so everything was kind of leading up to who I consider Gary Wilson in some ways. You know, I was still searching who is the real Gary Wilson, I guess.
Well, is it true that John Cage kind of took you under his wing for a little while and gave you that critical advice?
Yeah, well, what had happened, like I said, I was playing in the string orchestras and the orchestras at the time, and I was writing music at the time because I was kind of interested in avant-garde music and stuff, so I was writing music for our chamber ensembles, and we would do shows after school, you know, in the gym and stuff. So anyway, so my teacher, who she was a violin player, she says, well, why don't you try to get a hold of John Cage? And we're talking, you know, when I was 14 or something, 15, 14. And so, you know, at the time, I always admired him. So I looked in the New York City telephone book, and lo and behold, he was listed in the telephone book. So I called him, and he gave me a post office box number to send some scores that I was writing for us. And I sent him up the scores, and then I followed up the conversation 2 weeks later, and he invited me to his house. And that was kind
of odd.
Yeah, it was amazing. So I'm like 14, and you know, my mom had to take me from Endicott, New York, up to he was living in Haverstraw, New York, which was kind of outside of New York in the woods.
I know where.
You
I
know
don't
where?
Live far from it. That's why.
Oh, cool.
I live
cool.
close to it.
Yeah. So anyway, so we're talking. So all of a sudden, you know, the first day I remember, my mother had to drive. You know, it was about 150 miles or 140 miles from Endicott or something. And so we got lost because it was out in the woods. You know, we're out in the middle of nowhere. So we're at the general store, and my mother and I, and so I had to call Mr. Cage, and I said, "Hey, Mr. Cage, you know, we're lost. We can't find your house." So he came down in his car, and he picked me up, and my mother waited for me at the general store. Right? So he takes me to his house, and, you know, we're making small talk in the car as we're going to his house. And I'm, you know, and that's where he told me a kind of, you know, different thing. You know, he said, well, you know, I didn't really start making enough money to support myself till I was, like, 50, you know. Or, you know, he's giving me all this. I'm like, I'm 14, you know, thinking. And, you know, when I look back at it, and then we went to his house, and, like, you know, three different days we went each day up to his house, and he went over my music with me, my scores, and corrected things. He would say, well, how do you think the trombone will interpret what you have written there? And I would say, well, a glissando, a slide from low to high. And he would scribble it out and put in some kind of notation and say, okay, this is what they would need. And, you know, he was like a huge influence on me. And, you know, one of the main things is, you know, you got to, you know, you don't want to sound like everybody else, you know, in a sense.
Right.
And that's what I gathered from him. You want to stand on your own. You want to, there's nothing worse than being in a show where you got four bands where everybody sounds the same, you know. And as far as me, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but at least that works for me. So, you know, I always kept that kind of in back of my mind, and you know, he was a huge influence on me, you know, and I, strangely enough, my girlfriend, who was a grad student at UCSD at the time, they were talking, I don't know if it was the 80s or somewhere, in maybe the 90s, but he was like a visiting artist in residence there for 3 months or something, and so I went out, and my girlfriend at the time, one of her advisors was a violin virtuoso who was friends with Cage. He had premiered a lot of Cage's works in Europe. So they came to one of her shows. I got to see Mr. Cage, and I said, "Hey, Mr. Cage, you remember me when I was, you know, 14 or something?"
Oh, that's
and he
wild.
Said, I don't know if he did. He said he did, and then I handed him my album. You think you really know me? And I said, "Hey, Mr. Cage, this, you know, this is for you." And you know, sadly enough, he passed away a few years later. So. But he was a great man, very humble. His house was, and I actually at his house, it was a. He lived in a community kind of like with a lot of modern people, modern architects, artists, you know, and they had like their own little communal garden. And actually
right.
one time we
exactly.
went up there and there was David Tudor in the garden.
No.
And I went up to, you know, and I was with Frank Rome, I think, at the time. We drove up there just on a lark, I think, and Cage wasn't there, but Tudor was there. And at the time, David Tudor was the music guy behind Merce Cunningham, the dancer. And so we asked him, we said, "Hey, David, you need a couple extra musicians to help you?" And he said, "Well, now the budget's cutting low with Merce Cunningham, so it's just John Cage and I or something." So, but anyway, yeah, he was a great man, you know, very, very influential on the way I think in these days, you know, as you said. One of his things, if you don't ever take the audience, you're not doing your job. But you know, yeah, so everything's working beautiful, you know.
You're still a work in progress. It's I don't know what I expected, because my son was trying to fill me in on you, Gary. So now I need to tell him I have the 411. Don't need his, you know. But you had a song called When You Walk in My Dreams, and there was a line in it, 1,000 Kisses on the Beach. And I used to torture my kids with that line. And I, not being a music person, it's like all these years later now, not that many years, but a few, and here we are, I'm talking to the man that wrote it, and it's just kind of strange. It's on my bucket list. I will trap someone and give them 1,000 kisses on the beach. It's happening, okay?
Oh, yeah,
it's happening.
Cool, cool. Somehow, yeah. We still play that song. We still do it in shows. When You Walk Into My Dreams. We did a couple of shows just recently with Ariel Pink and the Black Lips, actually. We did about 3 shows with them just in the last 2 weeks. But, yeah, so, yeah, we keep that song in the old repertoire.
That's a cool song, yeah. All right, so now let's bring us up to date. You have this new album out, Alone with Gary Wilson. I know you've been on Jimmy Kimmel and Jimmy Fallon. Where can people find your music? Do you have a website?
Well, you know, that's available on all the, you know, all the download sites like iTunes and Rhapsody and Pandora, you know, it's on all that stuff. So it's on Cleopatra Records. It just came out like in September 18th, and, you know, it's my newer stuff. You know, I try to stay on focus with what I do, and, so it's kind of exciting. You know, like I said, we're still into it, and, I went to Austin and did a couple of shows for the record release shows and so everything's kind of going good with the album. My newer stuff and one of my favorites is Chromium Clown. If you get a chance to hear it.
Oh, I'm gonna check that out. My kids are on a cross country trip together. They left from Nashville. Yeah, they're on an adventure, so they're on their way cross country.
Tell them that I said hello.
I definitely will. Oh, my son will be blasting the songs now. He'll be like all excited because second hand.
Maybe you
got
become,
to talk
maybe
to
you
Gary
become
Wilson.
Cool,
yeah.
Cynthia. Maybe you become cool.
Yeah, come on, May. Come on, that's not going to happen. I know 3 songs, and one happens to be one line in his song, okay? That's just the way I am. But
Well, listen, Gary,
isn't it funny how small the world is? It really is small, you know, and it just because I was researching you, I happened to see that. I was like, you have got to be freaking kidding me that this guy is the one that wrote that line. So it's just weird
Isn't that funny? Yeah, it's funny how that all works out, huh?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
See, when I first moved out to San Diego, it was like 78 or something. And I was playing. Actually, it's funny because I was never much of a blues fan, to tell you the truth. You know, when I was growing up, when I got out of high school, of course, like I said, you only had to be 18, so I ended up playing with Peggy Lee's piano player.
Oh, wow.
And the drummer was the vice president of the union, so so I got in with these guys. I was playing, bass with them, and I was, never a big fan of blues, but when I moved out to San Diego, actually, there was a band that was playing that had a lot of gigs, so they said, we need a bass player. So I said, they got a lot of gigs, so I might as well join them, right? So then I ended up playing from there. I got a real good blues lesson. I ended up playing bass with, I don't know if you know these people, like Roy Brown, who had a good Rockin' Tonight Seltzer covered it. A bunch of people covered it. And his name was Roy Brown. And I always considered Roy Brown kind of the originator of rock and roll. You know, they talk Chuck Berry, they talk all these people. But if you listen to Roy Brown, he was like, he was big like in 49, 51, 52, but then he was making a comeback, so I ended up playing bass with him. And then I ended up playing bass with the Coasters and with Charles Brown and Big J McNeely, all these kind of guys. And so I got a real lesson in that. But, it's a real, I always talk about a real we did a gig at the Whiskey A Go Go. It was probably 1980 or something, and Roy Brown was headlining, and we had like the Sir Douglas Quintet, I think, was opening for us, and all the blues people from L.A. came to the show. You know, the older guys were showing up. You talk about the Blues Brothers movies. Well, you know, this was the real thing, you know. And so you had all these older blues people paying respect to Roy Brown, who was making a comeback. So, you know, I got to sit in the dressing room while all these guys reminisced about the old days of, you know, in the late 40s into the 50s. And, you know, it was a real fantastic thing. But, you know, part of my... I guess, excursion into music from, I covered a spectrum of music, but like I said, I always, it ended up being until I hit like 22, 23, 24 is when I think I found who Gary Wilson was. In between, I had put out a couple records previously, and, yeah, you know, I was still searching, who is Gary, you know, I had influences, you know, I liked Herbie Hancock, Keith Jarrett, You know, I got to see all these people with Don Cherry when I was 18, you know, in small clubs in New York, and, you know, plus Cage, plus the Mothers, plus rock and roll, you know, so it all kind of, but it took till really You Think You Really Know Me and that album where I finally found who is Gary Wilson and all this mess.
Okay, well, then now that makes perfect sense. And hey, you know, we just had Augie Myers on the show a few weeks ago.
Oh, is that
from
right?
The. Oh, yeah, from the Sir Douglas Quintet. So,
yeah.
I mean, this
that's cool.
Yeah, it never seems to
him.
His music, he's a funny guy. Have you ever listened to him talk? He's hilarious. He's a really funny guy. Yeah. He's going to come back on in December because he wants to do a comedy book. And he's almost like a stand-up comedian. But he's hilarious.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
listen,
we're gonna let you go here because we're running out of time. But it was so exciting to talk to you, and I can't wait to get on the phone with my son. They're someplace in, I think they're in San Antonio right now on their adventure. They're going on to look for ghosts today.
Oh, yeah.
But
you know, I'm gonna be playing in San Antonio on I think the 11th actually.
They'll already be through there. Otherwise,
they'll be gone.
They'd send them. Rats. Well, listen, Gary, it was great to have you on the show. Please, through Gary Rich, please keep us posted on what's going on with you, because we got a lot of chatter when people found out you were coming on. So best of luck
and
to you with this new album. It was great to chat.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And thank you, and we will talk soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Thank
Take
you.
Care.
Great.
Bye-bye. Isn't that, he's another humble musician, May. They're
absolutely.
All so humble. This is the thing that gets me. See, actors are not like that. Actors are like, you know, enough about me. What do you, what do you think
No,
of
it's
me?
Enough
you
about
know,
you, more about me.
Yeah, there you go.
So it's all about me. That's that line.
Right.
But
wow.
It was great.
Isn't it funny,
yeah.
though, we just had Augie Myers on, and he's talking about, you know,
Sir
being
Douglas
there with Sir Douglas. Yeah.
It's the world
that
of getting
wild.
Small. But anyway, so listen, we're really winding down. And so I will let you know how the event goes tonight. I'm excited.
Yes, Miss Ambassadress. Yes, you have to let us know how Rockers on Broadway. Put a lot of pictures on Facebook.
Oh, I will.
That'd be awesome.
I will. I'm going to be tongue-tied, I'm sure, when I get up and
no,
get whatever.
No, you won't. You always
And, you know.
No,
and also, also Deborah Gibson gets her Lifetime Achievement Award. And guess what? Our friend Billy Amendola isn't even here. He's out in California right now with the Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp. And I just saw him a picture of him and Ginger Baker as he was interviewing him. So
Billy.
It's kind of crazy. But anyway. All right. We're going to have Buzz Kaysen on soon, so I can't
Yeah, he's
wait.
Going to be on, I think he's on next week. So
okay.
I just got it. Yeah, I think Buzz Kaysen's on next week. And so I'm going to let you go because you got to go beautify for your big event.
Yeah, I got to do that. So am I speaking to you afterwards or no?
Yes, yes, my darling.
All right.
I'll Skype you in a minute.
Yeah. I'll talk to you. Goodbye.
Okay. That was Miss May Pang on her way to put her glass slippers on for Rockers on Broadway. Big shout out to Gary Raychuk for hooking us up with Gary Wilson. Can't wait to call my son and give him the 411 on that. You've been listening to Dinner Specials on Blog Talk Radio. Ta, everybody. Have a great week.